If anybody misses the goal of this right, so Rick will be speaking to their offering. I will try to have a
Hello, everybody. I hope everyone had a very inspiring Shavuos. There's actually a thought from yesterday's parsha that's connected to Shavuos in a bit of a negative sense. The pasuk says in Mishlei, it's actually a pasuk about women, but it goes beyond women. It says Chochmas Nashim Bansa Besa. The wisdom of a woman builds a house, builds a home. Chotzva Amudeha Shiva. She excavates her home by building seven columns. So the Gemara says, the seven columns refer to the seven books of the Torah. The question is, there's only five books of the Torah. So the Gemara says that the book of Bamidbar is actually divided into three chumashim. So as a result, Bereishis is one, Shemos is two, Vayikra is three, Bamidbar is three, six, and therefore Devarim is seven. What are the three divisions of the book of Bamidbar? So they're very unequal. The first division is Parshas Bamidbar, Naso, and Baloscha until they leave Har Sinai. The second division, as a Chumash, is only two verses. Vayihi ben Soah Aaron, that's what we recite when we take the Torah out. When the Aaron traveled, Moshe said, may Hashem disperse the enemies of the Jewish people. And the rest of Bamidbar is Chumash number three. And Vayihi ben Soah Aaron is a Chumash b'fnei atzmo. It's only two psukim, it is 58 letters. This even has a halachic ramification. The Gemara discusses, if God forbid there's a fire, so on Shabbos, and it's not life-threatening. If it's life-threatening, of course, you put it out, but let's say it's a seer, it's not life-threatening, you're normally not allowed to save property on Shabbos, but you're allowed to save something that equals an entire sefer or an entire chumash. And the Gemara says, any kitzvei HaKodesh that has a minimum of 58 letters, you're allowed to save, because that is the size of smallest chumash, Vayihi ben Soah Aaron. What is the meaning of dividing Bamidbar into three chumashim? Why would you do it, and why would you have such a crazy way of dividing it? So Rav Tzadok is masbir this way. Rav Tzadok says that the first third of Bamidbar is the ideal society, and that's what we talked about. It's about creating a society of Torah, avoda, gemilas chasadim. Each shevet has its place, has its role. The focal point of life is the Mishkan in Avodas Hashem. So the beginning of Bamidbar is the ideal community, which is a Merkava, a chariot for the Shekhinah. The last third of Bamidbar is the sordid reality that represents the failure of that ideal. Right after they leave Har Sinai. Kivro Sataiva. Right, if the three amudim of kedusha are Torah, avoda, gemilas, chasadim, the three amudim of tuma, as we discussed the other week, is kina, jealousy, taiva, lust, kavod, the need for honor and glory, and that sordid reality is exemplified throughout the second half of Bamidbar. Kivros hataiva, the desire for the meat, even though they had the man, the jealousy of Korach. The Meraglim, according to the Zohar, they didn't want to go to Eretz Yisrael because they thought they would lose their job and they wouldn't have the kavod. So, it's a negative, dark image. The beginning of Bamidbar is the potentiality of holiness. And the end of Bamidbar is the sordid reality of how that holiness got perverted by kina, taiva, and kavod. The two psukim in the middle are the transition downward between the ideal and the reality. And it is the key to how could a door that had reached the highest levels of Kedusha sink to such a low place. And the answer is, it occurred when the Aram traveled. Rashi explains that they were at Har Sinai for almost a year. They came to Har Sinai Rosh Chodesh Sivan of the first year, and towards the end of Iyar in the second year. So it's 11 and a half months. They're finally commanded to leave. Right? The Anone Yakovot starts moving. It's now time to journey. When it was time to journey, they were quite excited. Rashi, quoting Chazal, uses the Lashon. They were ketino kaboreach mibeis ha-sefer. Like a child running out of school the first day of summer vacation. I remember both seeing it and I remember doing it. Indeed. In fact, even here in Eretz Yisrael, you know, I almost got run over last year, I remember. Some kid was running out of cheder the last day and I bowled over. Why? Why were they so happy to leave? Because they figured, hey, we've been here for a year, we've gotten 613 mitzvahs, who knows what's going to happen if we keep on staying. Baruch Hashem, we get to get out of here. Aliba Diemis, that didn't help them very much, because Hashem continued to give them mitzvahs even in the Midbar, so they didn't escape that. But their attitude was, I want to get out of here. Rav Tzadok says, that is the fatal flaw. When you look at your Torah as a burden, even if you're keeping the Torah, you look at the Torah as a bother, you look at mitzvos as 613 problems you got to get around, instead of a source of sweetness and goodness and joy, then it's entirely possible that you can go from the highest madrega to the lowest madrega. Everything depends on attitude. Everything depends on how you perceive reality. In many ways, as a general rule, we get the life that we think we have. It's a very strange thing. We look at our life with hope, with optimism. We look at mitzvos as a privilege, as a joy. Hashem will give us those feelings. Hashem will give us the experiences that will justify those feelings. We look at life as a burden and a bother. We look at mitzvos as things to get over with, biyotze. Then indeed, we get further and further away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, Rav Tzadok says, what took the Dor HaMidbar from the highest level of Kedusha to the lowest level? Now, of course, I do want to emphasize right off the bat that the Dor HaMidbar was still the greatest generation. Now, people say the greatest generation was World War II, American fighters called the greatest generation. But for the Jewish people, the Dor HaMidbar was the greatest generation. The greatest generation that experienced the Nisim of Yetzias Mitzrayim, that experienced Matan Torah, that saw the miracle of the Man and the Be'er and the Anane HaKavod for 40 years. They were zoche to a Gilui Shechina that no other generation ever had. And we know by Kriyas Yamsuf, even the maidservants saw on the Yamsuf more than the Navi Yecheskel, who saw the whole Maisei Merkava of the Shekhinah. So we need to understand right off the bat that when we talk about the Yerida of the Dor HaMidbar, we are still talking about a generation that was infinitely greater than we can ever imagine. But Lefi their Madrega, this was a Yerida. And Rav Tzadok says, the key to the Yerida is Tinoi Kaboreach Mibeis HaSefer. That can destroy everything. And that is why the two psukim, Vayihi ben Soah Aaron, are set off in the Torah by nuns. There is a nun before and a nun after in the Sefer Torah. It's actually in many chumashim. It's printed as well. We know that nun is a symbol of nefila, falling down. Right? The Gemara in Bracho says, every verse in Ashrei begins with a letter of the Aleph Beis Gimel Dalet. Except we go from Nun, Malchuscha Malchus Kol Olamim, to Samach, Somech Hashem. We don't have a verse beginning with the letter Nun. And Rav Yochanan says, why does not Ashrei have a pasuk beginning with Nun? Because Nun is a remez to Nefila, as the pasuk says in Amos, Nafla, she shall fall. Loi Saisif Kum, she will not get up again, Besulas Yisrael, the Virgin of Israel. And David HaMelech did not want to begin with a pasuk that had the message of Nefila, and he only mentions Nefila in the next pasuk that says, Someich Hashem l'chol hanoflim, Hashem supports those who fall. So he mentions Nefila in connection with Someich Hashem, but he would not begin a pasuk with Nefila. Yes, absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. Number one, some of those children may not have experienced the Exodus, but some of them experienced the Man. I mean, they were born in the Midbar. I mean, remember, if you were younger than 20, you were not in the Gezerah of dying. So there were 18-year-olds who experienced the Man and everything else. But certainly, I mean, at least they heard it from their parents, like anything else. I mean, their Masorah was much more immediate. They heard it directly from that generation. Yeah. And the women, that's a very good point. That's a very good point. We don't have, actually I shouldn't ignore that. We don't have a record, right, we don't have a record of how many women came in. It's interesting, the Ramban has an observation. The Ramban Shita is, and this is fascinating, there were no natural deaths in the Midbar other than those recorded in the Torah. Nobody just died of old age. Which would suggest that if the women were not nichlal in the Gezerah, then, I don't know, even if there were 110, 120, whatever it is, you know, they entered, because there were no natural death. Now maybe they died soon after. But that's another miracle. Nobody died in the Midbar b'derech hateva. In fact, according to Chazal, but be it as it may, it is a very good point. Women themselves were the balot mesorah. Now, yeah.
You mentioned chokmas nashim bon sabesa.
Yep.
And it's interesting to know that the notes chokmas are mentioned twice. One in Parshas Pinchas, Parakov Zayin.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the last parsha in Masei, right,
yep,
before the end of our Midbar, Perek Lamed Vav, I think it is. It was called Perek Lamed Vav. They mentioned again. So the question is, why couldn't they not have mentioned one time the whole thing at the very
right
one time?
Mm-hmm.
Why did Hashem give them two parshios in the
right
Torah?
Right.
So a Chazal bring that in connection with Kofmas Nashim.
Yeah.
Chazal bring that. They, like you said, they transitioned very low point.
Right.
Don't forget, they're waiting for those people to die. They knew they couldn't
right
get into the land until all those people died.
Right.
And then they transitioned, and then he wanted to end by Midbar on an upbeat note,
mm-hmm,
going into Canaan. So he brought in B'nai
right
Slavchad
right
to bring it in on a high level, and because they loved their
mm-hmm
show so much, they
yep
was
yep
open to have two parts here.
Yeah, that's very good. And that's the Makar. Chazal say specifically, Nashim Chavavos Es Aretz. Chazal make the specific point, and we see this over and over again, that the women exhibited a greater love for Eretz Yisrael than the men. Nashim Chavavos Es Aretz, and that's the raya from B'nos Slavchad. They are mentioned twice in a different order. One is according to their age, and one is according to their comparative chachma, and the like. Now, Rav Tzadok does say, though, that is why Vahi Ben Saya Ha'aron is bracketed with Nun. Because if Nun is the message of Nefila, the Torah's merames, that the attitude of Tino Kabareich mi Beis HaSefer causes Nefila. But here is the hopeful message. The Nun that brackets Vahi Ben Saya Ha'aron is a Nun Hafucha, meaning it's upside down and turned in the other direction, as if to say, no Nefila is permanent. All Nefila can be turned around. It can be reversed. There's always tshuva. There is always tikkun. There is always having a new attitude towards life and towards mitzvahs. And therefore, Nefila does not have to be a permanent condition. On one hand, Nefila is part of life, to be sure. But on the other hand, no Nefila has to be permanent. And a person can never give up hope. A person can never be despondent. A person's internal matzav can always change. And no matter what the externalities of our life, the way we relate to it can really define what it is. Yeah.
Could you just elaborate why those two sentences are the transition?
Because what is happening is Hashem had given them the command to leave Har Sinai, and those two psukim are expressing the movement away from Har Sinai. The Aron is now traveling. They are moving. And on that, Chazal say, they are moving like a child running away from school. So those...
The rest of it is not.
Huh?
The rest of it, the senses are not.
Well, it's only two psukim. The psukim are describing the movement and Moshe's prayer. Well, we need a prayer as we move. So that's all it is. It's describing the movements of the Jewish people and Moshe's prayer when the Aron HaKodesh was moved. Okay, that's the idea of Ketino Kabareach, the base of Sefer. Now, yeah.
Often, Chazal, see a word that will give them that idea. What word in those psukim, brings out the idea of children running away?
Chazal actually don't really give us a reference. That's very, very true. They kind of worked backwards. By looking at the Yerida, they say it was the attitude. So it's really working from the effect to inferring the cause. Now I want to go backwards a little bit about this, talk about something about Shavuos that ties into this. That is, I mentioned it in Matan, so anyone that was there, forgive me for repeating. But there is a Gemara in Masechet Shabbos that talks about Matan Torah, and it quotes a statement of a person from the Galil, and he said, "Baruch Rachamana, blessed is Hashem, who gave us a threefold Torah to a threefold nation, and the third month Nisan, right? Threefold Torah is Torah Neviim Kesuvim Tanakh, threefold nation Kohanim Leviim Yisraelim." In the third month, counting from Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, after 3 days of preparation. The Gemara makes no comment or explanation on that, but it's simply making the point that a lot of stuff about Matan Torah is connected to the number 3. Just like the Pesach Seder is connected to the number 4, 4 kashas, 4 sons, 4 cups of wine, somehow Matan Torah is connected to 3. But what's the big deal of 3, and why is it important that Matan Torah is connected to the number 3? So the Maral of Prague, who wrote a whole sefer on the Inyanim of Matan Torah, a very wonderful, wonderful sefer, Teferes Yisrael, the beauty of Israel, explains that 3 represents a number of synthesis and integration of opposite forces. The example would be, if you have the base of a triangle and you have a line with 2 points, the 2 points are moving in opposite directions. But when you draw a line from the opposite points and they meet at the apex, at the top of the triangle, what you've done is you've combined, you've integrated, you've synthesized forces that would otherwise be in perpetual opposition. Maral says that is what Torah is about. The Torah teaches us how to synthesize, balance, and harmonize forces that would otherwise be inconsistent and incompatible. How is that so? So on one level, we are comprised of body and soul. Our souls are chelek elokam mimal. Our souls come from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not only come from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but in a way that we don't really understand, our souls are a chelek of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When the pasuk says, "Vayipach v'yapav nishmas chayim," Hashem breathed into Adam, and that initial creature was Adam and Chava together, nishmas chayim, a spirit of life. And it's only by Adam that Hashem breathed. Right? Hashem made everything, but only with Adam did Hashem breathe. So the Zohar HaKadosh says, "Man d'napich." When I breathe into somebody, like mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, mi garmei napich, I am blowing my own life force, my own life that keeps me alive. I'm blowing in. Kav yachol, that's what Hashem did. So as a person who's essentially a neshama, all we desire on that level is devekas b'Hashem, kedusha, holiness. And yet we also have a body which has its own drives. To eat, to sleep, to have comfort, physical comfort. Without a Torah, these two drives are in fundamental contradiction. Meaning, we can try to be holy sporadically, but eventually the needs of the body are going to pull us down. And we live in this constant on-off, on-off, on-off situation where we vacillate and we're pulled from Kedusha to the world of Chomer, the world of Gashmias. What the Torah does is, the Torah teaches us a mechanism where we can even take the physicality and materialism of this world and we can elevate it, we can consecrate it to Hashem. We can marry and procreate, and that becomes the mitzvah of Pru Urvu. And as the Rambam says, marriage itself is a mitzvah, even if one does not have children. Marriage itself, the Rambam says, is a mitzvah in the Torah. We eat and we drink, but we, through making brachos and through eating l'shem shamayim and to eat and to go on vacation, so we will be refreshed to be able to do mitzvahs. The Rambam says it is even the recreational activity that becomes avodas Hashem, if you just have the right kavana. Right? Just think. Right? There is a role in a Torah life for all sorts of appreciation of aesthetics, of beauty, of pleasure. As long as one keeps in perspective to, as a source of gratitude to the Ribono Shel Olam. So what does the Torah teach us? The Torah teaches us that we have the capacity to integrate and synthesize the body and the soul. They don't have to be in contradiction. They can live in harmony. That the needs of the body are not a contradiction to the needs of the neshama. But the body itself can be a way of serving the Ribono Shel Olam. That is why the Torah is connected to the number 3, which is the synthesis and integration of opposites. That is why the Gemara makes the point that would otherwise be a non sequitur, that there's a machlokes, how do you normally celebrate Yom Tov? According to one view, because one pasuk says Yom Tov is for Hashem, and another pasuk says Yom Tov is lachem, for you. So is it for Hashem, is it for me? So according to Rabbi Eliezer, which we don't paskin like, he says you have a choice. You can make Yom Tov totally for God, just daven and learn, don't eat. According to Rabbi Eliezer, you're allowed to fast on Yom Tov. Or, if you want, you can make it primarily for yourself. Have huge meals, just do minimal davening and the like. So the way Rabbi Eliezer reconciles the contradiction is either or. Either totally for God, or totally for you. Although totally can't mean totally, you have to think, whatever, but mainly for you. Rabbi Yehoshua, however, and we paskin like Rabbi Yehoshua, says no. The way, you don't reconcile it by saying all this or all that. But rather, you gotta do both. Chatzi, some of it for Hashem, davening and learning, and some of it to have a meal. Okay. The Gemara then goes on and says that the machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehoshua is by Pesach and by Sukkot. But when it comes to the holiday of Shavuos, which is the day we got the Torah, everybody says, now, if I were to leave it blank and ask you to fill in the blank, you might have thought everybody says you have the option of learning all day. In other words, even Rabbi Yehoshua that says you have to have a meal would say on Shavuot it could be all spiritual. The Gemara says the opposite. Even Rabbi Eliezer, who gives you the option of learning all day on Yom Tov, on Shavuot you have to eat. And not because of cheesecake. Even before that minhag, you have to eat. Now, the Maharal says, you would think almost the opposite. You would think, if we're saying Shavuos is special because it's the day we got the Torah, then I ought to be given the permission just to learn and not to eat. The Gemara says the other way around. Even Rabbi Eliezer, who gives me permission to learn and not eat, on Shavuos, you can't just learn and not eat, you have to eat. The explanation is this. Because the whole idea of the Torah is about synthesizing the physical and the spiritual. So to say you're not going to eat implies I only have Kedusha when I'm doing spiritual things. No. Torah is synthesis. Torah is integration. Torah is, as the Rambam says, a mechanism to fulfill the all-important value that Shlomo HaMelech describes as b'chol d'racheha da'eyu. Know Hashem in everything that you do. Everything that you do. So here, the Maral says another point. Yeah. That's right, because they would only be spiritual, they would not be physical. That's right, that's right. So here, the Maral points out in a different context that this is a unique koach of women. Everyone knows, and I know that you've heard this either at your Sheva Brachas, your children's Sheva Brachas, mm-hmm. your grandchildren's Sheva Brachas, more than once. A very, very famous Gemara, beautiful Gemara. We know Ish and Isha share two common letters. Aleph Shin, which means fire, and Yud and He, Ka, is the name of Hashem's name. And the Gemara says, when the Shekhinah is in their marriage, they live a marriage based on serving Hashem, then everything is wonderful. Men are men, women are women, everyone is doing their role. But if you take Hashem out of their lives, they become an all-consuming, selfish, burning fire that will destroy the other and ultimately burn up themselves as well. Right? Beautiful, true idea that without Hashem you're only living the life of egotism and selfishness, and that will destroy the marriage. But the Maral takes the question one step further. If indeed Yud and He are Hashem's name, why does the man get the Yud and the woman get the He? Right? So he says the following. The Gemara in Maseches Menachos quotes the pasuk, which we actually say every day in davening, Ki baka Hashem tsur olamim. With the name of Ka is Yud and Hey, tsur olamim, Hashem created worlds. So what's the plural of worlds? Olam haba and olam hazeh. And Ka means he used the power of the letter Yud to create Olam Haba, and the power of the letter He to create Olam Hazeh. We'll try to explain this. And therefore, Ki Baka Hashem, with the letters Yud and He, Sur Olamim, Hashem created worlds. Now, the Maral then goes, this is a Gemara. The Maral then goes on and says, why is Olam Haba Mechuvan to the letter Yud? Because Olam Haba is a world of total spirituality. There is no eating, there is no drinking, and this is very important because the truth of the matter is, Chazal do use a great deal of physical imagery describing Olam Haba. Tzadikim sit with goblets of wine. In fact, one of the great, great descriptions of the Olam Haba in a physical way is the poem Akdamos that was read on Shavuos, if you were up that morning or whatever it is. Akdamos is a very, very difficult poem. I mean, the Aramaic is very, very difficult, even for someone who is accustomed to learn Gemara. But large parts of Akdamos, now Akdamos is not from the Gemara, but it's totally based on Midrashim and Chazals, is a very physically graphic description of the pleasures of Olam Haba. Drinking and gold tables and reclining and being served the Leviathan and the wild ox and all of these different things. But we understand, and the Rambam told us already, that Olam Haba is only Ruchani. There is no eating, there is no drinking. We are Nana Miziv Hashchina. And since we don't fully understand what that pleasure is, it can only be described to us by great, great physical pleasures that we know what they feel like, and then it gives us some idea of, in a very infinitesimally small way of what that'll be like. So Olam Haba is Kula Ruchani, and Yud is the most spiritual of letters because it has the least physical presence. A Yud is only a dot. It represents the world of Ruchnius. I'll come back to why a man gets that letter. We'll get to that. Hey is mechuvan to Olam Hazeh. Why is Hey the letter of Olam Hazeh? By the way, that's the meaning of a line in Akdamos that says, Hashem created this world, ba'asa kalila, with a light letter, the lespe mishashusa, that has no substance. That actually is the letter he, because a he, your lips don't even come together, it's only, just blow it out. Right? That's the letter he. That medrash is actually in Akdamos. The Maral says, he is a composite of two letters. It's a dalet, not a resh, it's a dalet. And the left leg of the hay, I would have thought is a vav, but the Maral says it's a yud. Hay is a dalet and a yud. Dalet, if yud represents pure ruchnius, pure spirituality, dalet represents pure materialism. Because matter, physical matter, exists in four dimensions of time-space. We have length, width, height, and time, because time is, exists, or matter rather exists in the framework of time. So, what turns out is the following. Yud is pure ruchnius, and that's Olam Haba. Olam Hazeh, our tafkid, is to take the yud of ruchnius and bring it into the dalet of materialism. So now, let's go back to the man and woman situation. The Maral says, and again, these are generalizations. I'm always scared to offer generalizations because people will say there are so many exceptions. But the generalization here is the following. Men are often jeopardized by their encounter with the physical world. The physical world brings out testosterone, it brings out competitiveness, it brings out jealousy, it brings out rivalry. So just as a person with emphysema might have to be on pure oxygen, cannot breathe the air that's mixed with other things, so too, the man's primary kesher to the Ribono Shel Olam is by activities of the spirit in which there's a disengagement from the physical. So we gotta ship our men off to Kolel, up to Yeshiva, get them out of the, again, I mean, the person has to work, they have to work, but to the degree they can have time to disengage, they need to disengage from that world. Because the world will drag them down. The unique koach of women, the Maral suggests, is that a woman has a greater capacity to spiritualize the external and physical environment of life. And that's a great, great talent. That's the idea, to talk about the idea that creating a home, raising children, which of course is a joint responsibility, and in fact the Maral makes the point that the ezer kenegdo of a wife to a husband is to help the husband develop the capacity of hay. Hay is actually a greater capacity than yud. Because yud is the capacity of ruchnius, divorced from physicality, and hey is the capacity to spiritualize the physical. And that is why the man gets the yud, the woman gets the hay, but ultimately the hay is supposed to be shared, just as with Avraham and Sarah, each one got a hay, because that was the madrega of Avraham and Sarah. They both had that koach to sanctify the physical. That is the Ezer Kenegdo, and that is exactly the Torah, because that is why the Torah was given to women first. Because once again, if the Torah is mechuvan to the number three, and three is about integration, then indeed women had a greater a priori shaychus connection to the Torah than men. Right? So again, it's the Maral has a big arichas in this, but it is something to think about, the notion of sanctifying the physical. And this is really a great lesson. It's really a great lesson for men and women to think about. Because much of life has drudgery that we don't associate necessarily with spiritual work. You know, whatever it is, running carpool, dropping things off to the cleaners, reading a child a bedtime story for the 58th time, the same story. And a person sometimes thinks, oh, you know, when I was in seminary, when I was in yeshiva, you know, I was hearing these great, great, profound, you know, thoughts, and now what is my life about? The dishes and diapers and work and all these things. Where is the ruchnius? It's very, very true that a hey is only half as intense as a yud. A yud is a more intense spirituality, but it's a less meaningful one, because it is a spirituality that is separating from the world that Hashem has given us. And in a way, it's kind of a tragic, a bit sad idea, that ultimately, as the Medrash says, and the Tanya quotes this a lot, but it's not the contrary to the way Chabad says, it's not the Bala Tanya's mimer, it's a mimer Chazal, that a Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted a dira betachtonim. I'm sure you've heard, if you have any Chabad friends, I'm sure you've heard the expression, but it is a Chazal. Hashem wanted to live in this lowly world, this world of carpool, this world of diapers, this world of doing things that seem to be on some level so far from spirituality. And yet this is where the Shekhinah resides. And through our mental processing and through our internal attitudes, we have the capacity to make this Kedusha, make this Avodas Hashem, to elevate ourselves and whatever activity that we're doing. And this is the yesod of Torah being connected to the number 3, to integrate and harmonize what would otherwise be opposite and opposing forces. Now, I just want to conclude this thought, then I want to go on to one final thing, with something Rav Tzadok says. Rav Tzadok does not quote the Maharal here, but Rav Tzadok says a word that is almost the same, but he gets at it from a different lashon in the Psukim. In the Psukim of Matan Torah, we read before the Aseret HaDibros that there was thunder and lightning, kolos ubrakim, and miraculously it says, kol ha'am shomim, everybody heard the and roem, they saw the kolos, which is a miracle, they saw the thunder, ubrakim, and the lightning. And then we have the Aseret HaDibros. And then there's a tiny little change that instead of saying thunder and lightning, it says thunder and lapidim. Instead of berakim, it says lapidim, torches. And it's not a reference to the Lapid family in the Knesset. But we saw lapidim. So Rav Tzadok is omed on what might be a small difference that we wouldn't even notice, and that is, before Matan Torah, they visualized Barakim. And after Matan Torah, they saw Lapidim. Why was there a difference in their visualization? Rav Tzadok wants to suggest that the difference in what they visualized represents a transformation in the idea of Kedusha before Matan Torah and after Matan Torah. Before Matan Torah, a Jew, and really every human being, just wants to go get closer to Hashem. But it can only be done by escaping the needs of the body. The gashmius of the body was an inherent contradiction. That's why there's celibacy and vows of poverty, renunciation. That is compared to lightning, because when you're achieving that holiness, that nirvana, there's a brilliant flash of light. But then the body beckons and you're plunged into total darkness. It is the nature of lightning, which you have bursts of light, dark, light, dark, light, dark. That is the Kedusha before Matan Torah. The Torah gave us this mechanism of synthesis and integration that is a torch. Now a torch also flickers, but the torch is at least a constant light. It gives you warmth. It gives you direction. It gives you guidance. You're not on, off, on, off, on, off. You have a constancy and a central core of authenticity in all that you do. I remember the going to Amuka years ago, with Or Sameach, and I don't know if you've been to Amuka. Amuka is the kever, it's near Tzfat, a very deep valley indeed, Amuka, and it is the kever of the great Tana, Rav Yonison ben Uziel, and the legend has it, or the Kabbalah Masaira is, that it's a very good place to pray for a shidduch, And in fact, we have countless stories of young men or young women accidentally leaving Sidurim there, which of course had their name, address, phone number, and email. And members of the opposite gender very conscientiously wanting to fulfill the mitzvah d'oraisa of Hashavas Aveda made contact. And indeed, stories have it that a number of shiduchim were made, marriages were made that particular way. But I just want to mention a minor point about Amukah, that when I think it's better now, but when I went to Amukah around 20 years ago, there was literally no lights there at all. Meaning to say, the only light you had in a very, very precarious and dangerous series of mountain turns, all you had were the headlights of the car or the bus. And it was very, very quite frightening just to drive over there. These hairspin turns were, God forbid. That's the old story about why Eged bus drivers go to Olam Haba right away, because of all of the Tehillim that they made people say in their lifetimes. So big zuchus. So imagine, so just as a conceit, imagine if there were no lights, there were no headlights at all, and the only way you could navigate the roads would be by occasional bursts of lightning. It would be impossible. With a torch, you might be able to make it. And Rav Tzadok says, the great idea of Matan Torah was that life is now a torch instead of a burst of lightning. Now, once again, it's a tragic compromise in a way, because lightning is a brighter burst of inspiration than is a torch. But a torch has constancy, stability. And that is what Torah is about. We're not angels. We live in a world of struggle. We live in a world of gashmias. We live in a world where much that we're going to be doing in life, like what do they describe as soldiers describe battle? What do they describe? They describe what is it like to fight a war? I don't have the exact quote, but it's a very, very, it's a neat quote. It basically says, hours and days of boredom punctuated by seconds of utter horror. That's how they describe battle. Now, life is not, Baruch Hashem, for most of us, life doesn't necessarily have the horror aspects. We could say it in a positive way, that there are kind of periods of boredom or, not doing the most interesting things, punctuated with occasional moments of aliyah. But, once again, that torch gives you that connection to Hashem in whatever you're doing.
The torch also needs a physical source of fuel.
Yeah.
Lightning, okay, maybe in theory, but not.
Right, yeah.
So it needs the
gashmias. Well, yes, that's important. And that actually, it needs the gashmias as the fuel, and it needs human effort as well, because you have to put in your view of life. If you don't have that hashkafa, then it's not going to happen. Yeah.
Could you just review and enumerate the three parts of the integration?
I did not say there are three parts to integration. I just said this. I said that the number three represents taking opposite forces and combining it. So the two opposite forces are body and spirit. When body and spirit are harmonized, you have the two points of the triangle that join together at the apex of the triangle. Okay? So the integration is really two different forces.
The light of a torch can be passed from one to another and kept going.
Yep.
Whereas the light of a bolt of lightning, it's an individual thing. Doesn't pass on anything.
Yeah, that's right. You know, we read about Hadlakas HaMenorah, and remember Rashi says, it's a Chazal, that Aaron was very unhappy when he saw all the Nesiim bringing korbanos for the dedication of the Mishkan. And Aaron was not told to bring a korban. Shevet Levi didn't bring a korban. And Aaron thought that perhaps this was a sign of divine anger at his role in the Chet HaEgel, that Hashem had not forgiven him. So Hashem gave him the mitzvah of menorah, and Hashem told him, your mitzvah is greater than their mitzvah. The mitzvah of menorah is greater than the mitzvah of the korbanos. Now the Ramban asked the Kasha, why is it greater? Korbanos apply when there's a Beis HaMikdash, and menorah applies when there's a Beis HaMikdash. Why would one be greater? At most, you could say they're the same. So the Ramban actually says that this is a remez that Menorah will have a mitzvah even after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. He says it's an allusion to Hanukkah, which will be a mitzvah that exists even after there's a Beis HaMikdash. But the Medrash gives a different answer. The Medrash says that even if the physical mitzvah of Menorah is only when there's a Beis HaMikdash, but the symbolism of the Menorah is a symbolism that endures throughout, because the symbolism of the Menorah is the light of the Torah, it is the light of the Shekhinah, and it's the light of the human soul that has a radiance and a beauty. When I look at the light of the Menorah, I see both the light of God and I see the light that emanates from within me. And the Medrash says there are so many remazim to the human soul in the light of the Menorah. And let me just share two of them. One of them you, Atirza, mentioned. One remez is, just like in a fire, the smallest bit of wood can ignite a big log. You can ignite a log with a match. So too, in our Torah study in Avodas Hashem, we have to be so humble to recognize that the smallest Jew can bring fire and light to the biggest Jew, meaning one can learn from everybody. Pirkei Avos says, Eizehu Chacham Halomed Mikol Adam. And the second remez is equally important. Just like by fire, as this is what you said, when you transfer a fire, you do not become diminished. Right? When one candle lights another candle, nothing is taken away. When we do chesed, we help others, we never lose in it. Our kedusha is only enhanced. In other words, what I give to another in terms of time, in terms of effort, in terms of Torah, in terms of money, it will all come back to me. I'm not going to become diminished. And this is the idea of the soul of a human being is like a fire, and of course the light of the Torah is like a fire. I did want to say another thing. Maybe I'll save it for next week. I'll just give you a little hint, and that is, in this parsha and also next week's parsha as well, there is the division of Kohanim and Levim, and each of them are given distinct tasks. So just as a teaser, which I won't say today, I want to discuss the different functions of the Kohen and the Levi and how they represent different ways of serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So anyway, wish you all a good weekend. Oh yes. The reason why at the beginning I didn't make the connection I wanted to make, the reason why I brought up at the very beginning how bad it is to be a Tina Kaboreich Mibesa Sefer, and that is the source of Nefila, we have to be sure that that doesn't apply to us, because Shavuos, we just experienced Maimed Har Sinai. Right? And now we're journeying from Har Sinai. If Chas V'Shalom, we are like the Tina Kabarech Ubeis HaSefer, we're in big trouble. So, the same way we have to learn from what our Avos HaKadoshim did, we also have to learn what not to do. And we have to be very careful in our attitude not to be Tina Kabarech Ubeis HaSefer. There's a famous thought that Rav Moshe Feinstein once said. Rav Moshe Feinstein once said that the old saying, Seshver Tzazayna Yidz, it is hard to be a Jew, destroyed a whole generation of sons of immigrants or children of immigrants in the 1920s and 30s in the United States. And indeed, it was hard to be a Jew then. Baruch Hashem, it's much easier than it was. In those days, people were in sweatshops. If you worked from Monday to Friday and you didn't come in on Shabbos, you had to find a new job. There was no legal protection at all. And after all, if a person hears over and over again how hard it is to be a Jew, and you're living in a free society where nobody's forcing you to be a Jew, then why be a Jew? Rav Moshe says the message of Yiddishkeit has to be that it's joyous, that it's beautiful. Not that it's easy, because anything worthwhile is going to be difficult. Here I remember years ago, I may have mentioned this before, there was an article that a journalist wrote in Rolling Stone magazine. This journalist is not alive anymore, Ellen Willis, but she did a great service. Her brother became a Baal Tshuva, and she was a freelance writer, and Rolling Stone magazine thought there was some drug angle or cult angle here, so they gave her unlimited pages to write about the brainwashing of the Baal Tshuva movement. So to this day, the single best journalistic explanation of Kirov Rechokim is this article. It was this, I think it's from the 1980s. And I remember I was living in Chicago at the time, and we all wanted to get a copy of Rolling Stone magazine. Now, problem is, you know, it doesn't look so good, a guy with a beard walking in Rolling Stone magazine. So all of us went to a 7-Eleven, like Willis, W-I-L-L-I-S. Ellen. She died last year. Again, it was a very poignant article as well. I mean, she was very eloquent, very beautifully written, and she was describing her own struggle. She was so blown over by all of this. She was like, you know, you're reading along. She's almost on the verge of becoming a Shomeres Mitzvah. So, no, last minute, she stepped back. But her brother, I think, teaches at Eishet Torah. I think he's a Rebbe at Eishet Torah. And were they here? Okay. Yeah, I guess I missed that one, but okay. right. Okay. No, it's an American magazine. It's not. Okay, maybe it's there. Maybe it's there. I'm sure it might be on the internet as well. Now again, Rolling Stone is not connected to the group, but it is a magazine about rock and roll, drugs, all of those things. So anyway, she writes there. So we tried to get it. So I remember we went to the 7-Eleven, 3 o'clock in the morning, not to bump into somebody, but of course we bumped into people. Okay. But what happened was that she writes about a conversation she had with Rav Noach Weinberg, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, who was really a phenomenally great person. And he asked her, what do you think is people live for? And she said, people live to have pleasure. Now, he could have called her a hedonist or whatever. He said, you're right. People live for pleasure. He then said, what do you think the opposite of pleasure is? She said, the opposite of pleasure is pain. He said, pain. He said, you're wrong. The opposite of pleasure is comfort. So she didn't understand, because comfort, pleasure, they seem to be the same idea. He says, no, they are absolutely the opposite. Pleasure is what you get when you struggle and you work hard for something and you achieve a certain accomplishment. Comfort is when you never get out of bed because you don't want to bother. He said, Judaism, Torah, is not necessarily a comfortable life. It's not supposed to be comfortable. We're supposed to be challenged. We're supposed to have struggles. We encounter all sorts of things that are difficult. But the pleasure at the end of the day comes from the struggle. And that's very true. People say no pain, no gain, they say by physical activity. And it's true with everything. The pleasure of a marriage is the work that people put in to make it good. The pleasure of raising children. This is actually one of the reasons why parents love children, perhaps more than children love parents. One reason is that Adam HaRishon was never a child. In other words, the first love that Adam had was parent to child. Child to parent is a second generation love. So parent to child is one generation earlier. But Rav Dessler says that the key to the strength of parental love is the amount of work and investment we put into our children. And that creates love. So when we say that Judaism, Tishrei Tzayin Yid, no, is not a good thing to say, that is true in the sense that if there's a negative attitude. But on a deeper understanding, it's precisely the difficulties and the struggle that gives a person a deep, deep pleasure. The pleasure of accomplishing something worthwhile. Comfort might be comfortable for a while, but after a while, you know, you get a little itchy. You're feeling like, what is my life about? What's going on here? Right? Go on vacation, right? The first 2 hours are going to be really fantastic. And then after a while, I don't know. Okay. One. That's correct. That is correct. In fact, that is exactly why the Maharal calls his sefer on Matan Torah Tiferet Israel, because Tiferet is the third sphera that synthesizes chesed, loving kindness, and gevura, and that is why it's called truth as well. So once again, the three spheros are synthesizing the opposite forces. So I wish you all a good week. Yeah.